Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
Basketball player turned guitarist, turned philosophy major, turned songwriter Paul Hansen has been performing on the Boston scene since 2005. Along with multiple national tours, mostly do-it-yourselfers, Paul's band, The Grown-Up Noise, has had several songs featured on MTV and popular Netflix shows, including 90210. His songs have also provided the soundtrack for various award-winning independent films. So, Paul Hansen, welcome to Song Creating.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, Steve. We were just talking before it started how this is an endless, fascinating subject. This here of songwriting, and I just love that it can't be pinned down, and that it can manifest in so many different ways. That it's awesome. It's definitely kept my. I don't know what I want to ask this question to you. Like, what's kept your fire going musically? For me, I was a guitar player first, like lead guitar player in a band. You know, just all I did was play. I was guitar, lead guitarist guy, and then I started singing a little bit, just very shy. In a shy way, started singing, and then I all of a sudden became a little bit of a singer and then a songwriter. And actually, it's the songwriting that has kept me fired up, even about guitar, about everything. Just, you know, long-term keeping your inspiration going, it's been the songwriting. And I didn't know that because, you know, as a guitar player first, I almost didn't like singers. I didn't like that process. I just didn't like, that wasn't my department. And now it's like singing and songwriting, there's nothing better. There's nothing more just... It's just an endless thing.
So, were you in a cover band before? Did you kind of get spoiled on that?
Oh no! A lot of bands, like tons of original bands, like all, yeah. But mostly bad. You know, or you just, you know, like went through the '90s, definitely in like some really experimental bands. And then I mean, in our high school band, we played mostly covers and a couple of originals. So I've actually played in mostly original projects as the guitar player dude. And then came to songwriting way later, like kind of like late 20s. Came to singing before I actually sang in public, let alone on a mic leading a band. So I'm very late to that, and I feel like I'm still very excited at just how it feels so different, that the singing and the I don't know where your musical journey starts, but it's just awesome. The songwriting just came at just the right spot. You know, because I was reaching I was studying jazz. Also, I went through a huge jazz phase with my guitar playing, and then I was just hitting a wall with jazz, because I just wasn't the virtuoso that I saw a lot of people. You know, I was probably like just in my head about it, and so just hitting walls. Like, I could play it, I could sit in and do the jazz gig, but just hitting walls, and it just didn't feel like home. And then like a few artists that I started really listening to. It just kind of pulled me. I feel like I just kind of got lifted up and just kind of plucked out of the jazz world back to like very simple, starting with like very simple folk songwriting and singing, and then just getting into my voice and stuff. And it's just been a lot of fun. And also very thankful to have done all that work on the guitar, because I'm sure, as you know, you can use all of that stuff in your songwriting. You know what I mean? Like, what inspires you, or tweak that? Or like when I finally got into the studio, I feel like I was empowered to try all these sounds on the guitar, on other instruments. So I had done all this work that I didn't know would be helpful to songwriting later on.
Has your journey crossed a lot of genres? Like back in the high school band, you're rocking out, you know, doing grunge and whatever. Yes, you're a younger guy than me. So
probably not as much as you might think. But so I graduated high school in 93. So you're absolutely right. Yeah. We did Nirvana, you know, did like the Hendrix thing. I even did, Eruption into You Really Got Me for the Battle of Bands, the Eddie Van Halen stuff. So like went through that phase, then got into.
Hold on. Did you just say You Really Got Me by Van Halen?
No. They're a cover of that song.
Yeah, okay. So, yes. I'm glad you knew that.
Oh yeah, for sure. No. So on Van Halen 1, Eruption It's Eruption goes right into You Really Got Me.
Ah, right.
On that album. Oh, yeah, yeah. No. Don't worry.
You were a real cover
band. I like that. You're keeping me
But you even covered their segues. Okay. Yeah. So that's a cover band.
Yeah. In high school, for sure. Yeah.
And it's fun. You know, it gets your chops and gets you out in front of people and gets your, hopefully, you know, lose your stage fright and get some confidence in it.
Absolutely.
And then songwriting is a whole different level of depth.
Yes.
And immersion, I think.
For sure.
It's also, it also makes it more personal. Yeah. Obviously. You know? Yeah. You can't get a whole lot more personal than that.
Absolutely. I do have to say though, my first love, the first thing that I got excited about musically at all was hip hop and rap, like Run DMC. I went to a bunch of rap shows like that. So that was actually the first thing that got me that got me fired up. I didn't start guitar. It was like James Gang, Joe Walsh and the James Gang that kind of pulled me I still love rap, but it kind of pulled me out of like basketball and rap into guitar at 16. So I was
that's a big shift.
Yeah, it is.
So the rap, this is like late 80s when Run DMC was.
Exactly.
Yep. Master Flash.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow. Where were you living at the time?
I was actually upstate New York in Rochester.
Oh.
Originally from, my dad worked for Kodak. So we were in Colorado. Then we went to upstate New York. Then we went back to Colorado. Then eventually settled into Rochester, upstate New York. But originally from Colorado. But upstate New York, and then ended up here because of going to Berkeley.
Were you in high school? Were you a combination jock freak? Did you cross over that?
Actually, so I played basketball. I'm really tall, basically almost 6'6". So I always played basketball going up, never really loved it, but was just good enough to I could be motivated. But I went to basketball camps, you know, they just have motivational speakers that just get you fired up. Mm-hmm. Then you go and you play and you get into it. So just good enough to be kind of coaxed into it, but never really loved it. And then when I found guitar at like 15, 16, I actually quit the basketball team. I didn't quit mid-season. So it was a bit dramatic looking back now, because I quit the basketball team, between my sophomore and junior year, and everyone's like, "Oh, Paul quit basketball team." But I was so happy when I found the guitar. That's literally all I did. I went in my room, shut my door, and just that's all I did was practice. And like, I feel like I understood the world better too, because I remember some of my teammates in basketball. We would play all week, and then we'd have games, and then on the weekends they wanted to play again. And I'm like, for me, I was like, it was like a job. I was like, we just play basketball all week. We had a game on Thursday. You guys want to get together and play on Saturday or Sunday morning? But when I started playing guitar, I was like, I get it. This is what it feels like to like something. So for me, I was kind of I literally changed identities mid high school, and I was so happy to do that, even though maybe it like appeared strange. I was just so happy to do that.
I'll bet the rumors in the hallway were rampant.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just, you know, it's like, oh, Paul's smoking weed and playing guitar. And I wasn't even smoking that much weed, but like, it's like, I felt like I woke up as a person.
Yeah.
It really felt good. And just to really get into something. But yeah, so I was late to it.
Before you even got out of high school, you already had a band going.
Yes. I mean, I took to it really fast, and that's all I did was play. So within about 6 months, I was playing lead guitar in a band. I mean, so I learned really fast, and that's all I did. And then, yeah, I was in a band with a group of guys my age. And then I got kind of invited to play in the band, like in a band where the guys were a year or two older. And so that was very exciting to play with the older kids, which, you know, as you know, it's always good to play with older and people who are better than you. It just kind of raises your fire and your skill up. So that was good. So then it just kind of steamrolled from there.
You know, I find there's a lot of sports and music correlation. I actually had started an organization here that didn't go very far, but it was a great idea called T3, Teamwork Through Tunes. And I was trying to find the kids in my small town who were going home from middle school, practicing playing guitar in their bedrooms, and not meeting other people. So the whole thing, the whole idea was to get these kids together and actually make some bands. But the whole teamwork idea is really very similar, because I was a soccer coach here with my kids, and you've got different roles, and you've got to congeal and play the play, you know? Yeah. And so I don't know if you, did you find that, that may have been deeper than you ever thought about at the time as a high school kid, but looking back, do you see that, did playing on a team in sports help you, do you think, as a musician, as a band member?
Probably unconsciously. Yeah. Probably just, you know, like with the, you know, the weird finger pains and the calluses and like whatever the side effects were to jumping into guitar all of a sudden, anything that was slightly painful, I was like, oh, that's nothing. Just because I remember just, you know, playing bat through sports, it's like, oh yeah, you got to just suffer through this a little bit and boom, you'll be at a higher level. So probably, yes, probably unconsciously, yes. Like I maybe even more so of like, right, just different personalities getting along. And I would say even playing in a band, it's like, it's even more emotional than sports, because maybe sports is so focused on what your goal is, where when you're playing in a band and then you start writing songs together, it's like just the emotion and the personalities are wide open, but it's wonderful. You know what I mean? Just to partake in that and get anything done in that world. And I feel like, your idea of that T3 is a great idea, because I feel like, or at least people that I, as crazy and weird as musicians are, I feel like the people that I know that have been in bands forever are good at listening to different personalities, different opinions, you know, maybe more so than some people that haven't been forced in that emotional cell, you know what I mean? That is music or sports.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and they've been kind of forced into it.
Yeah. And the other aspect of the sports is the repetitive motion. Constantly shooting that hoop, shooting that foul shot, shooting. And it's the same thing with a musical instrument.
Exactly.
You know, I teach guitar and I keep saying, when you've got some, you know, G to C chord transition, you know, I teach a lot of beginners, just keep doing it.
Oh yeah.
You know, and eventually, you know, you just get that muscle memory, and that's a lot of it.
Isn't it funny how a lot of students too think that there's a way you can intellectualize your way there, or there's an aha moment, or there's a way to figure out to get there. And it's like, no, just whatever that statement, geology, just pressure and time. Like, you just literally through repetition, it'll open up like a flower. But it's tough, right? Because people are used to, like, they just think like, oh, there's some, if I can just unlock this one way of thinking about it, then I got it. And it's like, no, it's actually, it's not intellectual. Just like you said, repetition, and then things will just start appearing, you know, like it's hard to explain to a beginner.
It is. So, did you go to Berkeley right out of high school?
No, my parents wouldn't let me do that.
I was wondering about how they factored into this whole thing.
No, they did not, because I was definitely a bad student, like good kid, but bad, really bad student. And so I actually went to a school in Ohio that was actually not far from a school my brother was going to. So my parents were like, oh, well, let's see how he does there. He's not far from Eric. And then I started getting really good grades and studying philosophy, and I got like graduated cum laude, and my parents were like, who is this kid? I mean, so I was like applying myself academically and then playing in a million bands at that college. And then they were, then I kind of got the blessing from them. They were like, okay, go ahead and you can pursue music. I mean, they were supportive, but I think they were also just kind of like, who is this guy? But so I, in a roundabout way, just being a late bloomer was a good game plan, even though I didn't know that's what I was doing.
And philosophy must absolutely affect your songwriting and your creativity.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Did you get a degree in that? Did you go
on? Yeah, I did. And I was actually going to, for a while, I was going to go on in get an advanced degree in philosophy. But then I was also playing in a whole bunch of bands at Ohio University. Not the big one, not Ohio State, the small hippie one off to the side. Mm-hmm. But I was playing in a lot of bands. And then I just noticed it was like the philosophy professors would be reading this intense stuff and having these amazing thoughts, but it was very much by themselves. Maybe there's one other person they could talk to who's reading the exact same passage and understanding it. But then in music, it was just so social. But I feel like it also had like an intellectual side of it. So it just seemed like, and I mean, I was too young and dumb enough to know, like, this might be kind of an insane life choice, maybe not a smart choice. But that's but I feel like I benefited from being kind of clueless in that way. But it just seemed like between the two, music seemed way more fun and social. You know, even though I loved reading that stuff and churning through all that philosophy, that was really exciting.
When did you start your songwriting, and how did that progress in this time of epic maturity that you
the delayed maturity? You know, when I was at Berkeley, I was doing jazz performance. So
were you writing back in college also?
No. Well, so I was in like a Sonic Youth type band, or actually we were like poetry and noise. So a poet would bring a poem and then we would try to fit music to the poem, and that would either be noise or like a little jazz piece. So I was writing only very abstractly and collectively. I wasn't. Well,
this sounds really interesting. So this was part of your you did this all the time. This was part of your performing. There was somebody who would bring in a poem
and we had exactly that was our band. And then there was three or four poets, and they would bring in poems. And then there was a group of us instrumentalists, and then we would work with them to fit the music. To fit the poem, whether it was like, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I interpreted this to be live. You didn't do this on the spot.
No. But
this was your song.
That would be awesome though, too.
That would be pretty
cool. In an improvisation sense, for sure.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm pretty sure I never did it, but I'm pretty sure there was an ensemble at Berkeley called Flowetry with this guy Armstead Christian, who actually passed a few years ago. Amazing, amazing man. But he actually ran a class that was similar to that. People would bring in the poems, and then people would talk briefly and quickly get into like a kind of a music and poem
thing. But I think that's really you know, that's a lot of what we talk about here is how do you take that lyric that you have and what's the feel that you want?
Yeah.
You know, and did the poet, did they work with you, or did he kind of give it to you and say, you know, and you would propose something to him after it's all done, and he had to either accept it, or how did that work?
It was pretty much, we kind of just did it in a group, and the poets were pretty good at letting us just kind of blow in there and get some music started. And then maybe they would kind of tweak around us, but actually there was like three or four poets. They were really good at letting us just kind of do our thing. And then we'd meet back up and tweak it. So there wasn't any of us that was like, you know, it was at a time in your life where like there wasn't any like real like lead. Well, there was one leader, and she's the one we can't find these days, but who kind of got the band together. That's a whole other topic. But you know, there wasn't any real strong leader, so it was very much just kind of a mosh pit of ideas. It wasn't a whole lot of direction. Although looking back now, I feel like conceptually the band idea was great. If we had a little more focus, and maybe the poets or somebody got a little more specific about ironing parts out, that actually could have been awesome. But it was very much a mosh pit of you know, too many cooks, I would say.
Yeah.
You know,
but the poetry, a lot of poetry that isn't written with a tempo in mind can be really hard to put some kind of a steady tempo to.
Oh yeah, for sure. And then a lot of times they were not singing, you know, they'd be speaking over it, and we weren't always kind of in a rhythm with them. Sometimes it was just a wall of noise, you know, or starting and stopping of noise. And then they'd be speaking their poem over. And then sometimes it became more like a couple of them became more like songs where it ended up them singing like a repetitive melody. And we would link up, but it's funny looking back, like it was very much a pretentious college band. And I remember we got into this, Cleveland, we got into Ohio's version of, you know, there's a music competition, I forget in New England what it's called, but we got into this one and we played with a bunch of rock bands, and they hated us just because I'm sure we were just kind of these weird college kids, but so we kind of went through like, maybe what we were doing was not good. But now, you know, 20 years, 20 plus years later, we were like, that was a kind of a cool idea. Like, or would it be cool to pursue something like that now?
It seems like that really was a, what do you call it? A real nurturing process
for sure.
For all of you to start doing that. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So then you got into, then you went to Berkeley, and is that really where the songwriting started?
No, it was kind of after a little bit during, it was like while I'm doing jazz guitar, you know, and again, hitting some walls. Just because there was so many, especially when I was there in the late 90s, it was still very much, very much a jazz school. And even though there was a couple of windows of other things going on, now it's really wide open and you can do a lot of different things. But it was very much a jazz, or you were aspiring to be a better jazz musician, at least when I was there. So I'm studying all this jazz, you know, writing all my arpeggios, learning, trying to be able to do bebop and all that stuff. But then I remember hearing Pink Moon by Nick Drake, like that, just hearing that album on headphones and getting into some early Velvet Underground. And actually I was really into this guy, Vic Chestnut, who's kind of an oddball folk songwriter. So I was kind of like listening to that for therapy. And while I just during my days, I'm shedding all this insane jazz stuff. And then, but my night times, I'm like listening to this, this other kind of more folk inspired songs. And then at one point I'm like, well, at the end of the day, this is what feels nice inside of me. Mm-hmm. So it was almost like a basketball thing where I was doing the jazz, 'cause I was like, well, I want to be able to just show up and get paid for a gig and not have to practice. So it was, I had almost like a workman's approach to jazz, but much more turned on in every other aspect of my brain when I was listening to this other music. Yeah. So then I'm, you know, graduated Berkeley, chasing down all sorts of gigs of all kinds, and then just started writing more on my own. Of course, obviously they started way too complex. You know, the chord progressions and stuff were a little bit wild. But so it wasn't until after Berkeley that I really started, you know, feeling confident in my own voice, let alone doing anything in public. It was kind of after that.
Yeah, when Berkeley had was it focused so much on jazz, was there really much lyric writing?
So they had that. See, I wasn't doing any songwriting.
Jazz. You know, when you listen to, I mean, I listen to jazz all the time.
There's I love it. Yeah.
A lot of lyrics. You know, it's.
Right. Not. And I wasn't doing, you know,
maybe it's just what I listened to, but.
Right. Yeah. They probably, yeah. No, I think I was doing mostly instrumental stuff.
Yeah.
Like it probably would have been good to be accompanying more singers and focusing on that aspect of it as well. But for me, it was just kind of memorizing standards and learning every scale from every position and all like that kind of stuff. But definitely, it didn't feel like me, or didn't feel, I liked going through that boot camp, but the, like where we started discussing just the songwriting, and then I'll just coming back and falling in love again with something very simple was just awesome. Mm.
So you're still finding yourself at this time?
I think so.
Maybe you are now still, who knows?
No,
there's a progression.
Yeah.
When did the lyric writing start?
I mean, that didn't really start until I started writing songs.
Yeah.
And it was very much only later on did I start actually, you know, maybe starting with a lyric. When I first started writing songs, I was very much like writing to my voice or just like singing phrases and then trying to I still try to do this, like have an idea of what I want the song to be about and then just have the phrases come out of my mouth and then trying to fit the words to what I want it to be about. So kind of definitely letting the music drive it and then trying to pull the lyrics and into the phrasing that I like. But now I feel more confident. I think I can write a lyric. I mean, I haven't done it that much, but where I can start just with a lyric alone and then obviously edit a little bit and then put music on top of that. But for me, the songwriting definitely came from the music first.
Yeah.
Because also I was just so scared of singing in my voice, and I have a very limited kind of baritone range. So I feel like I had to like make sure it felt like it's like my sound or my tone or whatever was coming from a good place first.
Almost. When you started writing those chords and getting that feel for that, did you even have a topic in mind for the song? Anything in mind, or were you really open and just waiting to hear what feel the song?
Both. I think in the very beginning it was just wide open, and then a phrase would come out and I'd be like, oh, let's make the song about that. Let's center the song around that phrase.
Yeah.
But later on, I think I got a little better at being like, okay, this is what the song is about. So I'm not going to decide on a phrasing or words until it fits what I decided it was about.
Yeah. Sure. Sometimes I think songs really just kind of lead you in. And write themselves in a way, because all of a sudden, you know, I can struggle about a particular song and for, you know, writing. And then I may sit down in a half hour, I've got one. And, you know, how did this happen? I'm really not sure. Sometimes I think you follow what the song has hinted to you.
Yeah.
And just let it go. And obviously you have to add it a little bit here and there to,
of course, but
it makes some sense. But it is, you know, as we were talking about earlier, it's fascinating. It's a process that I love the whole creative aspect of it. And to me, it is, I mean, I wish I were a painter. I wish I could take a brush and actually, you know, make art that it goes on a wall, or a sculptor, and actually make something that's tangible, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And maybe because I was a photographer, it's nice to have something tangible when you for your efforts. Songs are not really tangible.
Right. It's in the air.
Yeah. And, but that's the beauty of them, you know, and the interpretation of it and everything is kind of a, boy, it is kind of an abstract in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM.
You're throwing shade. No sun, just a backhanded love song. Who am I but a old flame that you can put right out, and no one hears my side. No one hears my cry. Your art's so good, you could paint a picture, make a movie of. With the words you write, working through the night by your candlelight. Such a turn of phrase in a perfect haze, you sell me out this way. On a moonlit night, you had me throwing up on a dumb boat ride. All the time you spent describing my eyes, all the time you spent crafting white lines. You throw in shade. No sun, just a backhanded love song. Who am I? Oh, flame that you can put right out, and no one hears my sigh. No one hears my cry. I was lost, it's true, but somehow you made it about you. Ain't it funny how you've been wronged more than anyone alive? Ain't the betting kind, but I bet maybe it's you this time. All the different ways you said that we tried, each one tied with a bow and a neat little lie. You're throwing shade. No sun, just a backhanded love song. Who am I? Oh, flame that you put right out, and no one hears my sigh. No one hears my cry. It's always strange coming.
Welcome back to Song Creating. We're here with Paul Hansen. And Paul, you're in the Boston area, right?
Yeah, I'm in Medford.
Yep. Medford, okay. We are talking about this song of yours called Shade, which is, you know, I have a lot of singer-songwriters on this podcast who have their guitar, have their voice. I love the production that you've got.
Oh, thanks.
And it's a little more... a little more pop than most of the people I've had. I get a lot of Americana and roots and that sort of thing. And it's actually very cool. And your jazz influences, I think, are really coming through here.
Oh, right on. Thanks.
I get that sense. And tell us how the song got developed.
Yeah. So just one thing production wise, like this, that comes from an album that I intentionally, oddly enough, there's actually guitar on that song, but I was going to write an entire album of music. I didn't write anything on the guitar. I wrote it on piano and I wanted to do like synth. I mean, this was like the four previous albums are all very guitar driven. So I was like intentionally trying to like just go with synths and try to do something very different for me. So I was intentionally trying to challenge me. But the song, it's I think it definitely comes from more of an observational thing. Whereas, and I know that this is pretty wonky and ridiculous, but for me, it's about like, it's a song for all the people who have dated and been significant others of artists of various kinds. And, you know, and that like the, and I've definitely benefited from this. Like, you know, when the artist or the songwriter, when they have a breakup or they have this wonderful medium to express how it worked out, how it didn't work out, and, you know, and it gets put into public. And so this song is supposed to be from the point of view of a non-artist writing their song back to the artist. Like, you know, how you kind of just have like used me and used our life in this great way that you can express yourself. And I have no response because I'm not a, you know, a songwriter or a painter or a poet. So again, I know it's kind of ridiculous. And I realize when I play it live, sometimes I explain the whole thing and then sometimes I just play it and people can think what they want to think about it. But for me, it's very much a song from the point of view of, you know, of a non-writer writing like a letter to the artist. Mm-hmm. From, you know, from a lover is where, so I know that's a little bit weird, but that's where that came from.
Well, without getting too personal, although I think we have to get somewhat personal here. Is this a particular relationship
I feel like the artist in this one. So I'm probably trying to get into like maybe into their head a little bit. So maybe not directly. If anything, I'm which I realize poses a problem at its concept is that I'm like trying to speak for the other person. But it's just, and you know, it's also it's like I love that for a long time I was trying to write this song called Songwriters Are the Worst Little Liars, just because I don't know, like I think I was inspired by you know, even just all the way back to Bob Dylan, Like a Rolling Stone. I kind of loved that kind of turning it back on the scene or pointing even if it's valid or not, just kind of pointing out the hypocrisy of an art scene, of a clique of artists. Like I love that Dylan did that, even though he wrote these amazing pure songs that kind of stand alone on themselves. I love when artists are able to kind of critique themselves in their own scene. So I guess it is. I've written way more like biographical songs, but this one I guess is more of a giant observation of the sphere of the scene. Which, okay. But I love that though when artists do that.
Yeah. Well, I think Taylor Swift made herself famous with all of that.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, she. I mean, how many times does she write about relationships and stuff?
Yeah,
for sure.
I think she's kind of famous for that, actually.
Yes, but has her? Well, actually, she's probably dated a lot of artists, so they can't express themselves. But for me, this song is the response of people that don't have the voice for themselves to be out front. That's why in the lyrics, you know, it's kind of like you're doing this amazingly creative thing by candlelight. Although in, and then in the bridge, when we get to the, you know, it always comes back to love. But honestly, I'll take anything you got for me. So the reveal to me is that they're ultimately flattered. You know what I mean? It's like I'm angry that our relationship is in public, but it's actually kind of flattering, and I'll take anything you got for me. That's the at least in my mind, that's the reveal. The bridge is kind of the reveal of the ex-lover.
I think that probably took a little while for that ex-lover to come to that realization that maybe this actually is a good thing. There actually is some emotion behind that guy, and he may feel a little sorry about dumping me so ceremoniously or unceremoniously. Right. I know I can't think of how many songs I've written for. My girlfriends tended to be short in duration, my relationship short in duration, and I was usually the one getting dumped. I wrote about them all the time.
Nice.
Oh, I mean, that's I think one of the first ones I wrote back in high school, it's the name of the song is Meaningless. And it goes, "Your love is meaningless. I should know." You know, it's a classic.
Wow, nice.
Classic high school, it's not terribly eloquent, but.
Awesome. You were writing in high school. You were already singing and songwriting in high school.
I was. You know, I think I started around 10th or 11th grade and
wow.
did that. But they I still remember them, but you know, they don't get played out. But no.
That's but awesome.
It's what is the this is a rhetorical question. What is a emotion that's stronger than love and falling out of love?
Yeah.
You know, whether it's for a family member, or usually, I mean, in songwriting and music, what's the percentage of songs that are written about relationships?
Right.
You know, 90, who knows, a huge percentage.
Right. And even when it's not directly, it kind of indirectly is.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or can be interpreted to that. Now, did you have Susan Catania as a teacher?
No, because remember when I was at Berkeley, I was just doing jazz.
Oh, that's
so,
right.
So I met her kind of later on the scene as a songwriter. I know
she's very strong in the lyric writing.
I know. And you know what? That's why we joke about this with each other, is that we come very, because I'm definitely, like I was saying, I'm kind of more music and phrasing first.
Yeah.
Like for me, if it's not a strong musical phrase, the lyric almost like loses its power. But so I'm kind of floating away into the clouds, and she's so lyric based. It's we're kind of a good push and pull.
Yeah.
Like I think we've kind of come to enjoy that we kind of see things pretty differently in that way.
There's a mutual respect for your differences.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I'm actually I think the way the lines are here, I see where the rhymes are now. They're kind of within the turn, such a turn of phrase in a perfect haze. You sell me out this way. So there it is a little bit more unstructured, I think, in a way. And it does give it that nice airy feel to it. It really adds to that. I sense this there's the sound. I'd have to hear it again. I think it's a little bit of a riff, probably on the keyboard, that takes me back to a sound I heard back in like 80s synth pop. And I can't remember what it was, but maybe because it's not so guitar. The 80s had no guitars, right? Right. The guitars came back in the 90s. So that a lot of that music in the 80s was very synthesized. And I kind of get that feel out of this song and the production value of it.
Definitely.
Is the rest of the album in that same vein?
Yeah, 100%. Like there's virtually, in fact, there's a teeny bit of guitar in the background of that one, mm-hmm. of this one. But there's virtually no guitar on that whole album. I intentionally was like, I'm going to write these on piano and then actually I was just going to make it almost like a solo natural piano, just acoustic piano and vocals, but then I kind of got into the analog synth thing a little bit, and I was like, okay, let me play around with this. But so it was, I was definitely intentionally trying to just to shake things up, like how I was writing the song and the production of it for sure. Yeah. So that was definitely intentional to make it sound more like what you're saying for sure. That was definitely the goal.
And you said you've got four albums before this that are more guitar driven.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to force you to do this, or if you don't want to, where do you categorize yourself as a musician? You know,
that is a problem of mine. No, it's definitely a problem, because at first I thought it was this strength. It's like, well, I love Americana stuff. I love folk. I love old country. So I have a little bit of foot in there, but then I love the freshness of like kind of indie rock and stuff and just odd phrasing. So I guess you could say I'm like indie folk and with also just influences and loves of many different styles, which I thought when I first started writing would be like, ooh, what a strength that is. But I feel like just looking at the outer world, I feel like the band, when we were really more active and touring a lot and pushing really hard, trying to get to the next level, it did not help us. It did not help us to not have this is our sound. These are our people. This is what we look like. Yeah. We never had that, you know. And I think almost like being a kid of the 90s, or going into and being in college in the 90s, where it was like baggy clothes. We thought it was all about on the insides. And then you get into the 2000s and it's like, no, you got to have your look together. And it's like, so with the Grown Up Noise, we thought we had the goods and the substance and that the image and the look and the style of things didn't matter. And I feel like we were, and the clarity of who we are and what we sound like didn't matter. But I think we were very wrong about that. So I would say that I've always had a problem with that. I would say if you had to pin me into something, I guess it would be indie folk. I feel like that has been a problem. But you said you feel similar.
Oh yeah, I don't think I'd qualify. I would categorize this song as folk, but you make
right. No, I guess I'm kind of thinking of in totality.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The albums prior. But and actually, this album was intentionally trying to get away from my folk influences.
I know when you put yourself on Spotify, they say, "Oh, well, who are your you know where do you who are you like who you know who are we going to match you up to?" And I just put out a second CD, which is, you know, it's just fun stuff for me. I'm not in this as a career. It's all island vibe. I can't call it reggae because it's not reggae, but I've got this band. It's called Sway Island. And
cool.
We just play. It's a live recording from a concert we had on a lakeside here. And it's all my stuff. So it's 10 of my tracks, but it's totally, you know, upbeat. It definitely has a reggae feel to it or an island feel to it. And then my first CD was very finger picky folky. Mm. And even that one, I didn't really know who to associate myself with in any way. So, you know, how many times has it actually streamed on Spotify? You know, Lord knows, not many. Let's say I haven't got
it. Same here.
But it's unfortunate that we have to categorize ourselves in a way, but
I know.
Yet that is the nature of being a commercial entity, which we are in a way. You know, no matter what, you're pitching to people. You want people to come hear you if you want people to come hear you and hear your music. You know, you can write songs forever in your bedroom and record them on your cassette deck, and you know that's the end of it. Or you can, you know, actually try to get them out. So yeah, you have to do that. It's tricky.
Yeah, very much so. Well, that's really cool that you did the album. You just like recorded it live.
Yeah, well, our sound guy has he can record individual tracks every instrument. So I had to mix it all a little bit differently, but it's very cool.
That's great. Yeah. Did you have an audience there too, or were you just recording?
They were out there in kayaks.
Oh wow! Nice.
Kayaks and paddle boards.
Yeah. Wow, that's really cool.
It was pretty neat. Thankfully, it was a gorgeous day. It was fun. So we played a couple hours, but seven of the songs are mine. So those are the ones I don't want to deal with copyright somebody else's songs, and so it's just fun. So
So that's awesome.
Yeah, swayisland.com, everybody. You can go there.
Wait, what is it again? Swayisland.com.
Sway Island.
Yeah. Nice.
I don't know how I came up with that name. Awesome. Kind of waking up one morning, and the town I live in is called Wayland. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool. I got way and land in the name of it. And it sounds like a, you know, sway and island. And
it's sway just island, all, yeah.
I go on my my domain search, swayisland.com. It's available. It's like
it's available. That's now that's impossible. Yeah.
I know. Well, so was song creating when I put this podcast together a year and a half ago. I'm going, I got to come up with a name. And it wasn't the first domain I typed in, but I learned that, you know, to have a podcast, you really should have a website. And so I typed in a few things and they were taken. And I went, what about song creating? Boom, there it is. So
that's,
song creating.
Wow, that's awesome.
So, you know, it's a little bit serendipitous, I think. So anyway, enough that's about awesome. Me. I'm really enjoying this, Paul. You got a lot of great information, and it's.
I love this. This is like I said, I don't listen to enough songwriting podcasts, but it is kind of what I'm thinking about. Like, you know, a lot of the time.
Yeah,
for sure.
Are you one of the guys, the type that do you write every day?
No. I wish I could. I kind of need. I've been trying to say,
I don't necessarily mean music, but do you, you know, do you do the morning, the 10 minute morning, you know?
No, I think I'm just now, I feel like I'm getting with my schedule, with the kids and the teaching and family life. I'm feeling like I'm just starting to do that now where I have to be like, okay, I may not get anything, but I'm going to have to attempt to write, you know, during this window in the morning because it's actually available. You know what I mean? Before kids, I could stay up super late and just finish when I finished. And that was awesome. But like, I don't know what's happening to me, but I'm like tired sometimes late at night. So I'm going to have to find these little windows, but it just sucks. Right. When you have that window and then the muses for whatever reason are just not there that day. They're just not,
but they're not actually interested. There is an innate, for every person, there's a creative time, and it's different from one person to the next. And some people are really creative in the morning and other people are creative. I tend to be best about 4 in the afternoon. And for some reason, I don't know why, but that's just when things seem to come. And
interesting, like before dinner, like,
I don't know why, you know, and that's the thing. I don't think you can always really tell. But I think if you think about it, you'll start finding that if it's working best that time, set aside that time, and it might, you know.
Yeah,
I learned that from somebody. But
that's good. I need to pay attention to. I should do that. Actually, I should think about what when I'm actually finishing ideas, what time of day that is.
Yeah,
I feel because for me, it's like if a song has shown itself and then you're about halfway there, then I just get totally obsessed about that song. And so I'm driving, singing, and then I will stay up late at night trying to finish it. So it's like, for me, if like the song just kind of dangles itself, like it could be finished, then that's like the only thing on my mind until it's done. But then, like we were saying earlier, it's so unfair how some things that you really want to finish and you feel like you're going to be your best song ever just kind of fade away from you. And then this other one shows up and just finishes itself. And you're like, that's not the one I wanted to finish. Like, we really don't have a say. Like, it's like, I'm not sure how I feel about higher power stuff, but like, man, sometimes it really does feel like we don't have as much of a say in it as we think.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah.
There's got to be a metaphor there. I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah.
The direction the smoke is blowing, or
you
know,
yeah,
I don't know. Again, as we're talking, it's a fascinating thing. It really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm so happy that I'm a part of it in some way. I mean, I my brother's a frustrated musician. I show him my songs and he just goes, I don't know how you think of this stuff. And I go, yeah, you know, it's hard to get something over on him. And he's just so I appreciate that little bit of respect I get from my older brother, which which is
that's awesome.
Which is limited, but
so he plays too. Is he trying to write as well?
No, he'd love to play. He loves music. He calls me and says, "Listen to this. Turn on this radio station. Get a Spotify. Listen to this." And it unfortunately it's just not in his wheelhouse.
That's okay though. We need inspired, passionate listeners, right?
Exactly. Like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to have fans out there. Got to have fans. All right, Paul, this has been great. Paul Hansen is part of you are more or less like the lead factor in the grown-up noise.
Yeah.
And that is thegrownupnoise.com, right?
Yep.
Where'd that name come from?
It turned out meaning a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but for me, I think we were struggling trying to find a name. And so I started the band with Adam, the bass player of the band. And then we just wrote down a whole bunch of words and, you know, just scattered them together. And we were literally just kind of pairing words together because we thought we had a few ideas and then they didn't. And then just for some reason, that one kind of just appeared. And then we just sort of imposing our own like beliefs on what it made it think of. And for me, it was kind of like, things to rebel against. It's funny how everyone has an opinion about what the name means, but for me, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of about rebelling against, like, I don't know, complacency, you know, just the fear of getting older, the fear of money, which is very real. All those things, but just not letting the grown-up noise, all the things that come with growing up, kind of crush your internal spirit. So for me, it's about very much about, rebelling against those things and trying to stay like fresh at heart. But everyone has a very different meaning. Some people are like, "Oh, that's great. I get it. You're like the parent noise in the Peanuts, like wah, wah, wah." I'm like, "Oh, interesting." and then some people are like, "Oh, it's like a sexual innuendo." I'm like, "Oh, I don't." What? I mean, yeah, people have all these.
Somebody
all
will these, find a sexual innuendo in everything, I guess.
That is for sure. That is for sure. But everyone just has a different opinion on it. And now it just seems like in my mind I flirt with finding a new name, but just with the whole online world and starting from scratch would be just difficult as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, also you've got to have a name that you can, that no one else has.
Right. Right. And when they search, at least if you search the grown-up noise, that's what comes up. Like that's,
And Paul Hansen, if you search Paul Hansen, he is not the bassoonist.
No, right. Yeah. That I need to get on top. Thank you for reminding me that I need to get that on top. But I remember here, I think when I first got to Boston, I maybe saw a show with him. It was it like Mobius or Morbius. There was like this little experimental theater that was around.
Morpheus?
No. I think it was called Mobius, actually.
Oh, Mobius. Yeah. That was a dance. That was at one time a dance theater. Mobius.
Yeah. But and I think the bassoonist was playing at that. And I think I might've met Paul Hansen. Because I forget, is he O-N or E-N?
I think he's the same spelling. He's E-N.
That's. I think I actually might have met him, but I know I need to get my actual name like more solidified out there. But
well, there you go. There's your to-do list. And yeah. The first time I met somebody with my name it's just an odd thing. You think this is my name?
Right. You can't have my name. I'm the only one. Yeah.
All right. Hey, Paul, thank you.
Steve, thank you, Steve. This is amazing. I'm so excited for this show, too. Like, it just looks like such a cool theater, and it's so awesome that you do these Songwriters of the Rounds and these shows there. Like, that is just, it's just why is every town not doing that?
I know.
Like, it's really, really unique and cool. Like, that's.
And there are a lot of songwriters. For anybody who's listening, I host a songwriting circle. I guess it's not really a circle, but we currently have access to this beautiful old theater that was built around 1910, and it's just classic. And so we've got Paul is one of four songwriters who are going to sing and talk about five songs a piece. And it's I actually think the songs are wonderful, but really the stories behind them are what makes it so much fun. All right, man.
Well, thank you so much for having me on here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll be in touch.
Yes. I'll see you soon.
All right, Paul. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete.
If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.